Hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic, the one where I was forced to update the title in light of recent Twitter-based news events, which we will be talking about, Mr. Zach Polanski and his mum. Okay, cheers, everybody. Cheers. Welcome to Jolly Heretic. We're, of course, on public health, which is Monday, 7 a.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which discuss base science, interesting stuff in the news, psychology, all kinds of malarkey, and where we discuss stuff to create things published by our woke joke universities. Okay, cheers, everybody. Cheers, Paul. What's all this stuff? Oh, yes. Cheers, Mikey Bikey. Cheers, Kamara Omakara. Hurrigan Gurrigan, Kapis, Salu, Saludo. What's that? Lipton, is there some back noise there? Proust, Prost, Slanger, and what else? Slanger Var, and Hurrigan Gurrigan, and Kapis, and Turvis Sexy, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Okay, now hello, resident poet. Now, problem resident poet. The resident poet, we have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic Public House, and he's written a poem. There's definitely feedback. He's written a poem about part of what we're going to talk about.
Well, today. I don't.
Yeah, you've balled up. There's some kind of feedback. But unfortunately, news has just come in. Yes, cheers, resident poet. Cheers, John Fused 8281. As I explained to you, he left. But there's some new news which has come to my attention. So I changed the title in a hurry. And that was Lipton. I'm sorry, it isn't very professional for those that are watching because of the title and don't know that this is a live stream and all that. Lipton's ballsed up the microphone. So I don't know what to do. I don't know what advice to give. But it has come to my attention that Zach Polanski, King of Men, that lovely man, born something else, born Marden or something like this, born with a different name, identity, struggling with the old identity, changes his name when he reaches a certain age so that it's different from that of both his father and his stepfather. I really understand why. I did a video on this. But I Googled the name of his father, and I couldn't find anything particularly interesting. So then someone, it seems, has Googled the name of his mother. Now, his mother was, she was difficult to track down when I was doing my own research on him on another video, because she was already married when she'd already divorced when she married his father. And then it seems that she married again to a stepfather. So there's it was something along those lines. Anyway, her name is Ava Marden. And it turns out that Ava Marden goes by the name of Anna Aroma. That is Anna Aroma, Anna Arona, not anal aroma, like naughty people might think, but Anna Aroma, like anal Clooney. But Anna Aroma, and it seems that she is a BDSM escort that advertises her services on various places online.
Can I just quickly clarify? When you say it seems, it means you met her online in a professional capacity.
There was that element to research. Yes, I think it's always important to do full field work, as you know, as an anthropologist, as a trained anthropologist. We don't engage in armchair anthropology anymore. That's also 19th century. We engage in proper anthropology, but no, it appears and it's been checked and whatever, and so this does appear to be the case that his mother is an escort, and also that the family are not in favour at all of what he does, and are very ashamed of him. So I'm not amazingly. I'm not fantastically surprised that there is something like this in his background, because he just seems so odd. It seems so odd to change your identity like that, to completely change your name, to restore your original surname from Paulden to Paulden back to Polanski, to stand out as Jewish in a way that your family didn't two generations ago. The mother is Jewish, by the way. Both his parents are Jewish. His background seems unstable. He described his mother in an interview in The Guardian as an actor and his father as a tool seller. And
not a tool maker, a tool seller.
No, a tool seller. But yeah, he described his mother as an actress, but this is what everyone's now going on and on about, is this this mother of his, Anna Aroma.
At least one of his parents is intimately involved with tools.
In a way, yeah. And she's obviously followed him online, because I've then been looking into Facebook comments by her and stuff like that. And so I'm not sure about this idea that they're ashamed of him, because I am. She seems to follow people online and seems to be left wing herself and comments on things. It seems that the mother is Arva Marder, and she is an escort. And Green Party leader's mother, she's quite pretty, by the way. I should emphasize that. I don't know if she's had work done, but if you Google it,
well, if that's true, Ed, the father must be hideous.
I don't know what he looks like, but it's
yeah. But I'm saying, given that he was the Polanski, oh. if he was the issue.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yes, the father must have teeth missing and things like that. Lots of
well, and yeah,
the father has no teeth.
A spare eye on one side of his head.
Something like that. Yeah, something that explains it. But according to the Green Party Exposed, and she also used to keep a blog, Anna Aroma Escort blog. Oh my God, I don't know if I can show you this stuff. The journey begins. Isle of Man, posted by Anna Aroma. Hello everyone. Wow, how cold it is. Apparently, it's going to be -7 in Manchester most nights this week. Brr.
Is the Green Party Ed? Is the Green Party Exposed his mother's monthly newsletter?
No, it seems that the enemies of the Green Party have exposed the.
Oh, right, but she could have used that title just as easily.
Yeah, she could have done, couldn't she? But she didn't. The journey begins. Her blog starts in 2018. And it's just one large, massive paragraph from what I can work out, in which she refers to different escorts and things that she does. Anna Aroma XXX Miss Independence.
You were an escort, what would be your hourly rate?
I don't know. I'd have to look into what the hourly rate was, and then work out what I would do. What would you do?
So you're market led. You don't price
I'm market,
yourself.
I don't think there's an inherent price to anything. It's basic capitalism. There's not an inherent price. But I
price myself at a mug of Earl Grey and a ginger biscuit.
Well, that's very cheap, Paul, considering the kind of joy you could bring when you're in the right mood. To certain ladies, but I don't mean to be crass Darwinian and reductionist, but it just screams at me sort of fast life history strategy. The parents divorced twice, step parenting, unstable person who changes his name, changes his identity, and so forth. Changes political party as well. He was Liberal Democrat for ages. And then he wasn't doing that well there, and then he became Green. So he went like the other way from Liz Truss. Unstable identity, unstable person, unstable background, divorce, broken home. The parents in one case twice divorced, and the mother does work like that, which is essentially sexual work. So it's semi-sexual. It's fast life history strategy, as it were, work. So. That's what we're dealing with. And it's really, really, really clear. And I don't understand how they can then hold together a coalition of people with like that, whose backgrounds like that, and fundamentalist Muslims. I'm not quite sure. Lipton.
What do I think about
the Zach situation, yes.
Ed, politics attracts people who are psychopathic, people who specialize in deception. Secondly, Zach, there's something that I'm thinking about, but I would prefer to not say it about Zach Polanski.
Yeah, don't do that.
Pass. Yes, I would rather pass. But
all right. Zach use the Polanski, word. Like use, many... use the word Canadian. Use the word Canadian.
Okay, Canadian. Yes, but he fits a particular stereotype. Unstable personality, fast life history strategies, could be a bit psychopathic, subversive. That's another word that we could use to describe somebody like him. And as people say, it's always that type of a person. That type of person.
Yeah, it's all. It's
that's all I would say. Yeah,
it is. And there's normally a hereditary element to it. So I was watching a documentary the other day. Of an interview, of the daughter of a prominent churchman who was found to have been engaging in all kinds of nefarious activity. And she accused him of being a narcissist. And I thought to myself, well, okay, but you're half him. And the genetic component to this is about half. And actually, it tends to run more from father to daughter than from father to son, because there's evidence that it's on X and whatever. It's you've probably got some of those traits, haven't you? And so people say you shouldn't judge a person by their parents. Well, no, okay, that's horrible. I mean, nobody would like it if they were judged by their parents' behaviour in any way. But there is some logic in it, isn't there? If you meet some girl and she tells you her mother suffers from serious mental illness, that's worth thinking about, I would have thought. What do you think, Paul? Or is that too reductionist?
My biggest fear, it's a slightly different point, but my biggest fear is that it actually won't create that much of a controversy, because so far as the UK sunk into irredeemable decadence, the demographic that's voting for, you know, the younger demographic that's voting for Polanski will probably see some type of weird cachet in it.
Yeah, that you've got the, I mean, imagine if you're some young girl and you go out with the son of Fred West and Rose West, and apparently, you know, he does have girlfriends and they've got married, there's things like that. I mean, surely there must be some level on which you think it's more than just a folie à deux. There is certain personality, partly heritable traits that you've got to, and this was so obvious 100 years ago, back when people were crass Darwinists, everybody was. 100 years ago, there was a film in 1917 called something like something of the blood, and it went from 1917 to the 40s. It was that popular. I talked about it in one of my books, in my eugenics book. I forget what it was called. What are those birds called that are supposed to bring children to you in a basket? Yeah, stork. It was the black stork. That's what it was called. And it was about taint of the blood. That was the other title.
Lipton's stage name.
That's when Lipton does escort work, he's known as the Black Stork. Yeah, that's correct.
Or Stalker.
Stalker. Yeah. We got that at the same time. But yeah, it's something you'd be aware of, I would have thought. I mean, I would have thought that even if a girl says to you that my parents are divorced, that's worth thinking about, isn't it? Because if the parents are divorced, then you should wonder, well, what are the, thank you, resident poet, what are the factors that have led the parents to get divorced? We know what those kind of factors are. And that's worth taking into account in understanding the nature of this girl. So I would have thought that sensible people that have any understanding of genetics would say, even if it's like John Major's background, it's quite messed up. What's going on? Well, it produces a Machiavellian adulterer, John Major. And his father was 30 years or something insane older than his mother. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's telling you something. His background, and was a circus clown. And it's telling you something about the nature of John Major, that his father was something in like 30 years older than his mother and was a circus clown. It should be. Recognize.
These arguments don't matter because Zach Polanski is a politician in the UK. People voted for him, so obviously they don't care. Even if they had known before, it would not have made a difference.
Probably not. No, that's the weird thing, because it would have made a difference in the past. It would have made a difference if we went back, as Paul was saying, it would have made a difference if we went back 30 or 40 years and it emerged that that even things like having an affair and being caught meant that you'd probably had to resign, didn't they? It was that you were out. If you were a cabinet minister and you were found to be gay, or you were found to be having an affair, or you were found to be having a gay affair,
Didn't they just used to leave a revolver on the table and everyone would walk out?
Well, that was what they did in the Soviet Union, yeah. But then the change happened, I think, with Robin Cook. With Robin Cook, he was having an affair, and basically, Tony, exactly. Imagine it.
He was like a garden gnome that had been hit by a Range Rover.
A ginger garden.
Put back together badly.
A ginger garden gnome and with a beard. I mean, that was the worst thing. If you have ginger hair, okay, that's unfortunate. But you don't grow more of it than you need to. Why on earth would you grow a beard if you had ginger hair? You've already got ginger hair, right? You're going to let's have more of it than is necessary. But that's what he did.
Do you know, in America, they don't seem to mind about gingers.
I find that very hard.
Honestly, well, I knew a ginger Scottish bloke who got married to, you know, quite an attractive lady, well out of his league. And my experience of America was observing that it doesn't have the same. I don't think gingers have the same problem in America that they do here.
It doesn't evoke the same level of disgust.
No.
I don't think they do in Finland either. Well, there's so few of them, that there's so few of them that there isn't. There isn't. I've only met about probably like three ginger-haired Finnish people, and so there's not many of them, and there isn't like this cultural idea. I remember my uncle John, God rest his soul, saying to my dad that he had a grandson. Yes, and he has ginger hair, so I'm rather concerned that he might be bullied at school. You know, so that you having just met his grandson for the first time, that was his main concern. Fortunately, he grew out of it. You get some kids that have ginger hair when they're young, don't you? And then they grow out.
Yeah. You are talking about people with ginger hair and Zach Polanski, and I am talking about the benefits of depopulation.
Well, let's talk about the next thing on our topic.
Lipton, do you have many ginger people in Jamaica?
Not quite. We don't have many ginger people. People in Jamaica, the gingers in Jamaica, we're hairstyles a bit orange.
Malcolm X was a ginger, wasn't he?
I don't know. I know his mother was from Grenada. I don't know.
Malcolm X.
I've never seen a colored photo of Malcolm X.
Surely all photos of Malcolm X are colored, Lipton.
Yeah, I've only seen black and white photos of Malcolm X.
Oh, that was what you mean, right? Yeah.
But back to gingers in Jamaica.
Gingers in Jamaica are rare.
They are indeed rare. Their hair is a bit red, but my family has gingers.
Oh, but you're fortunate. Yes. But fortunately, you didn't inherit it. That would be even worse.
But yeah.
There weren't laws against gingers in Mississippi. They didn't exist. Paul saying it's tolerated there. But no, it was the case at school. It was just inherently everywhere in the UK. Non-UK people obviously find this shocking, but it was just really looked down on, and particularly with boys. And there's evolutionary reasons for that, because it's a sign of estrogen. It's associated with estrogen. So if you've got ginger hair, then you're elevated estrogen. And I've got a girl, elevated estrogen is sexy. Obviously, the boy, elevated estrogen is not sexy. So you don't get any of the good sides of being ginger, i.e. it's seen as sexy and unusual by men, and therefore they want, you know, as a girl. But you get all the bad sides, which is that you have ginger hair and you're likely to get arse cancer and stuff like that. So because that's the key thing they have with gingers is arse cancer. It's true. Look it up. Estrogen leads to elevated arse cancer. It's true. It's fact. It's true. It's laughing about all. I shouldn't laugh about it, Paul. Arse cancer is a very, very unpleasant thing. And it's very difficult to catch as well, because obviously most people are picking their arse all the time, so they don't discover it. They don't discover the cancer until they go to the doctor. It's too late, and the doctor puts his finger up their bottom, and then he says, "I'm sorry, I'm very sorry, Mr. McDougal, or whatever ginger surname the person has, but you've got arse cancer."
It's a good job I caught yours that time, isn't it?
That was very, very useful, but I needed a massage, and it was very, very good of you. It was very itchy.
Anyway, said love.
Someone said Ed must be great crack down the pub. That's very, very good, sir. But no, estrogen. Estrogen may have certain protective effects. Pop kettle on love. But it is associated with arse cancer. With extreme gingerness. I mean, there's this kind of relationship. There was a guy I had on here once years ago, and he did a whole. We mainly talked about ginger hair. What was his name? Some academic rather. He's done a book on ginger hair.
You should do a paper on ginger arse cancer.
Well, it's been done. The guy's name escapes me at the moment, but I had him on a few years ago, and he looked at all of the negative all of the correlates of ginger hair. So they have elevated. I've also looked at it in my book, How to Judge People What They Look Like, and it's elevated pain sensitivity, elevated sensitivity to certain kinds of specific pain, elevated sensitivity to electrocution. And various illnesses, most notably, as I recall, endometriosis in women, You don't really get any metrosis in men. It's frequency dependent selection. So basically, the theory was that men sexually select under harsh conditions when men were going out hunting and they were all killed, right? So there weren't enough men. So you had runaway sexual selection. And that created things like ginger hair, very pale skin, and blue eyes. Sorry, green eyes. So women stood out. And green eyes goes together with ginger hair. And so therefore, you ended up with this ginger people. But then because it's so new in evolutionary terms, it hasn't become uncoupled yet from the other mutations. So it's basically just high mutational load. And so therefore, it's still associated with these negative things, such as arse cancer, as I said, and endometriosis, which is like heavy periods and trouble getting pregnant. But then it's been selected for positively in certain places, such as Ireland and Scotland, because it allows you to take in more sunlight via your skin and synthesize it into vitamin D. And that outweighs the arse cancer and the endometriosis. Isn't that right, Lipton?
Yes. And let me tell you this again, too, Ed. The expenses of infrastructure are greater than the expenses of aging. Back to depopulation. You don't need immigrants. Depopulation is not a big problem.
Like with ginger people, you mean?
No, I'm talking about immigration and depopulation.
Ginger people, as they age, are going to get more arse cancer.
Lipton, can you please keep on our non-topic, please?
All right.
We're off topic, we want you to keep off topic, so you'll be on topic.
Okay. We'll move on. We've done that. We've done Zach's home mum, and we've done Ginger. I don't know how that's not on my list, but okay. So we're going to move on then. Lipton wants to talk about depopulation. So Lipton, the one thing that I focused on was an article I read in the Telegraph this morning, which I thought was very interesting, where it noted that British people completely overestimate how wealthy Britain is. So when they're asked, well, what country is comparable in wealth to Britain? They say things like America, Norway, Switzerland. Germany. They have no idea how poor Britain is. Do Poland now, says JOV. I'm doing it. They have no understanding of how poor Britain is at all, and they compare it to these much richer countries, and it's terrible because it's looking like. And I did a paper that predicted this a few years ago. Mathematically, it's looking like we will be overtaken by Poland by the 2030s. Poland will be rich.
That's by 2026. Well, that's actually in my book. From last year, people have been saying that Poland will overtake England and quite soon. London is a rich place in what is really an upper middle income country when you compare it to its peers. So England, it's not an upper middle income country. Jamaica is an upper middle income country. But if you compare England to her peers, she's an underperformer. And that's strange because England has a high level of human capital. So science in England is still first rate. But the issue is the commercialization of science. America does not have a commercialization problem. Many of the innovations in England are diffused elsewhere and are also bought by foreign companies. England also has a surplus of low-quality marketing and sales jobs, too many accounting management jobs, too many sales associates, too little product development executives. So the English economy is having a structural problem.
Right. But then in the 70s, England had, as I don't remember, obviously Paul might remember, he was a little boy at the time. But in the 70s, England was the poor, sick man of Europe, and it was well down there. And Mrs. Thatcher is credited with having turned it around and made us much wealthier. I mean, but in the 70s, West Germany was way richer than England.
I just put it in context? I grew up in Liverpool in the 70s, and then Thatcher came along and gave it a kicking. So Thatcher was hardly a godsend for Liverpool.
No, not for Liverpool. No, but Liverpool did it. I mean, Liverpool, their behaviour at foreign football grounds was completely unacceptable. I think we can agree. In Belgium, for example, they were very, very badly behaved.
No, it's more complicated than that.
Oh, it is. That's what a Liverpudlian would say. Oh, it's more complicated than that.
No, just complete typical continental policing infrastructure. And the bad behaviour had been going on for decades.
Fair enough. And it was probably caused by foreigners or something.
No, but you should expect, as a bad behaving football hooligan, you should expect safe football grounds to badly behave in, is my point.
That is a very good point. I wish I'd interviewed you about it when I did my Liverpool video. Lipton, so what is your thinking then with regard to why it was that Britain was rubbish in the 70s and has managed to become, comparatively speaking, rubbish again?
I like Margaret Thatcher. After Margaret Thatcher passed, I wrote an article in the Gleaner newspaper saying she had balls many men would envy. But unfortunately, she was not as strong on deregulation as people assumed. The Thatcherite economy was not exceptional. She busted the unions, but overall, not much was done to promote growth.
No. Selling off the council house stock appears to have come back to cause problems, doesn't it? So,
no. Let me explain to you what happened with the UK. Economies evolve, so they move from agriculture to manufacturing to services. But the UK, when the UK deindustrialized, unlike countries like America and Germany, the UK did not create high quality replacements in the service sector. So many of the service companies in the UK relative to America and Germany are low quality. So in America, if you are a business intelligence company, that's the service sector. Whereas in the UK, if you work in retail, that's the service sector. So the UK has a lower quality service sector than America and Germany. That's a big issue. So when the UK deindustrialized, it did not replace manufacturing with higher quality industry in science and the services sector, except Cambridge and London.
Presumably, though, it reaches a sort of tipping point, like in Poland. People in Poland 20 years ago thought, look at this, life in Poland is rubbish. I'm going to go to England and I'm going to earn a lot of money and then I will come back to Poland and I'll be a king, God damn it, a king. And that's what they did. And they came to England and they made a lot of money and they undercut local wages with their plumbers and things like this. They made a lot of money and they buggered off home once Poland got better and got a sense of confidence and got a sense that it was going somewhere, which I think it has. Whereas Britain, like in the 70s, really, when people were buggering off to Australia, has this sense of, oh, it's the story's run out, it's rubbish, it's awful here, it's terrible, we've lost it, it's no good, we're not getting anywhere. And then you get to a tipping point of enough people to think that, and then all the clever, industrious people just start leaving. And then you really, really, really fall apart until you completely deregulate and create a sense of confidence again.
Yeah, but how about this issue? Tebbit and Thatcher, I've always said this, they weren't conservatives in any traditional sense. They didn't want to conserve anything. They opened the floodgates. Blair was the second incarnation of Thatcher, and Blair set the grounds for the Boris wave. It was this complete liberalisation, the idea of global capital being somewhere didn't matter, the anywhere people should dominate. I'd argue Thatcher and Tebbit started it.
Yeah, but could you not counter argue that a certain degree it's getting that balance right between being open and being closed? And if you're too closed and you don't take in any immigration, any foreigners, any stimulus, anything new, whatever, then you just stagnate, and you're like North Korea or China before Deng Xiaoping's reforms. You just stagnate. But if you're too open.
Except, yeah, but there are different types of, as Polanski's mother well knows, there's different types of openness. And I do think that it was the Thatcher and Tebbit opened up the quick money, that the absolute not based on substantial manufacturing. So manufacturing in the UK was gutted too quickly. You could argue we needed to transform to a different type of economy, but not as quickly as it happened. You know, Germany benefited from being a manufacturing economy for years. You could argue they haven't adapted quickly enough now. But, you know, there are loads of reasons why a manufacturing base is important. Look at our defence industry now has been decimated, and on and on and on. And we've got service. The whole notion that Britain is just one big service economy for people on benefits. And where did that come from? Because people don't have manufacturing jobs.
Wait, no, I, Paul is making a brilliant point. I am pro free trade, pro low taxes. I am the typical libertarian. I see that Paul is mocking me, but he's making a serious
no,
point.
No. I'm England. Blowing kisses at you for being nice to me.
Okay. The British deindustrialized quite early, and they did not replace manufacturing with a service economy. Retail work is not high quality service work. That's the difference between America and the UK. In America, Boston Consulting Group, McKinsey, the KKK, the private equity firm, those are companies in service and finance. The UK deindustrialized without replacing the former manufacturing powerhouses with high quality companies in finance, tech, and management consulting. Other than London, management consulting in the UK is overrated. So London is a hub of finance, but the managers in London, they're managing assets for global elites rather than deploying capital throughout the economy. So America has a greater appetite for risk. So in America, venture capital and private equity, those funds are being channeled back into the economy. That's not the case in the UK.
But America's interesting. It's almost like a more risky society, isn't it?
You can
climb really, really high, but you can fall really, really low.
Yes.
When I was in America a few years ago, in California, the amount of people that have fallen really, really low, that just living in mini towns on the streets, essentially, is quite amazing. There must be some. I suppose you could argue they're descended from risk takers, really, aren't they?
Yes. There's a study by this female economist. She argues that people who are high in risk tolerance, they migrated to America. So she did a study, and yes, the immigrants who were more entrepreneurial, who loved money more, they went to America.
Presumably, though, the immigrants from Ireland that were more entrepreneurial and loved money more went to Liverpool, and that hasn't helped as much there.
The company's not KK. It's KKR, Henry Krabi's company. Somebody called me KKK, like the Ku Klux Klan. So Henry Krabi's, yes, it's KKR.
No, but I'm just pointing out that it doesn't necessarily work. You had a lot of immigration from Ireland, and those two into the UK, and those people weren't necessarily risk-taking venture capitalists, were they? Because Liverpool, which they took over, even electing a Sinn Féin MP, as I recall, its best days are kind of gone, really, in Liverpool.
You can't get a good price for hubcaps anymore. That's the main problem.
Or cathedral slate. Or anything else like that, but I suppose that does work. Okay, well, we'll move on to the next topic then. So I noticed, that Reform Party everyone goes on about, and they keep putting out new candidates every day. They keep putting out, these are our candidates for the election on the 7th of May, where we're hoping, of course, we're all hoping that Labour gets a severe kicking in the bollocks, if it has any, but. Almost all their candidates that they promote seem to be not just not native English, but basically Boris Wave. I mean, literally Boris Wave. They include, you know, a Bangladeshi with a student visa. literal. So he can't even. What happens when his student visa runs out? He resigns from the council, does he? Literal foreigners that have not even got full leave of right to remain yet, and they are standing for reform. The party of Britain.
Yeah,
the party
Ed, but I've said for a long time, if you want to sort out London's problems, you need a load of Nigerian mothers and the police force. I don't have a problem at all with certain immigrant cultures. I'd prefer Nigerian grandmothers for moral fibre and a sense of values than half the people, white people in the Labour Party. So I just wouldn't go by necessarily, you know, on that simple racial basis.
Well, you think that these... there was one guy, I think his name was like Anas something or other. And he was an Asian guy, but he had all tattoos, including on his neck. And I thought, and he's a Reform Council candidate in like Southampton or something. And I thought to myself, God, he's probably like quite violent. I can see your point there, that I do like their attitude to crime. when it's not corrupt, when it's not a corrupt attitude, which is just, we're going to deal with it now. We're not having this. You know, we're going to take you over there and just flog you. And, you know, that's it. There's no messing about. You're stealing. You're going to get thrashed. I think that's good. That's good. But they won't be. I don't think that if reform would allow them to advocate those policies. Poem is in the interim, 63N74M1N. No, it does seem rather silly, though, for a party that's meant to be the party that appeals to the gammons to just continually put up foreign candidates. It makes me wonder, and this issue was raised on the Lotus Eaters today, whether Hope Not Hate, who probably, and MI5 have insisted that they have a certain percentage of ethnic minority candidates for reform. Lipton.
Yes.
Do you think that's possible?
About what Hope, what repeat what you just said.
Well, do you think that's, well, Hope Not Hate were vetting candidates for Reform UK.
Yes.
And people argue that they are controlled opposition. So is it possible that Hope Not Hate or the MI5 have said you need to have a certain number of foreign candidates?
That would not be shocking. Let me tell you why. I remember listening to Nigel Farage some time ago, and the interviewer posed a question to him pertaining to deportation or diversity. And based on his response, it was quite obvious that he was not serious about mass deportation.
No, I suppose not. No. Well, that's the thing. The other thing that I find bizarre is that they've reported in the Times today that the extraordinary and terrible policies of Rupert Lowe's party, and they're saying, oh, it's unbelievable. He wants to deport all of the illegal immigrants. I thought, well, why on earth would you not want to deport all of the illegal immigrants? They're here illegally. They're breaking the law. How can you want to keep them in the country? It's extreme. It's insane. The banter's breaking down here. I don't know whether it's because Darren's not here to direct it. But I'm throwing a curveball out there. Can one of you say something in response to it that's slightly witty? That's how it works.
Okay. Well, yeah, but you're not giving us any raw material, Ed.
Exactly my point. Like, he's so unserious. He's a salacious guy. He's always interested in talking about these very low IQ slap topics.
Who is me? Yeah,
but Lipton, yes. There is quite a few in the comments Ed has to cater for.
I agree. Because we want to have a serious conversation about
deportation. All right, okay, I'm sorry. Well, let's go to the first serious. We've had £2 super chat from DeltaTrosk125, and it says merely hello, hello, hello. Thank you, sir. That's not helping me with stimulating Paul's mind, but
Trump, come on, Trump and the Pope.
Trump, okay, all right. Well, let's get on to Trump. So Trump is a holy man. Trump is the real Pope. Trump has made it quite clear that the Pope wouldn't have become the Pope if it wasn't for Trump. It wasn't God that selected the American Pope. It was Trump. It was kind of Trump. I mean, it really is. I love that. I just find, honestly, Paul, I know you're a Catholic and that, but I find the honesty of that, the narcissistic honesty, really refreshing.
Yeah, but as a cultural Catholic, what I find interesting about it is people can't gripe about what Trump said about the Pope when this Pope and the last Pope aren't really Catholic. It's bizarre.
Exactly. The previous Pope, I was not fond of him any at all, Pope Francis.
Yeah, but Lipton, did you follow the Dick Durbin story?
No.
Well, I might got some of the details slightly wrong, but the essence is true. I think it was the Archbishop of Chicago nominated a senator, Dick Durbin, in the States, who had consistently, as a Democrat, he's consistently voted for abortion in all its forms. And yet a Catholic bishop proposed him for some type of honour in the Catholic Church, and Pope Leo was going to endorse it. And all shit went loose because everyone's saying, how possibly? He's an awful Catholic if he's pro-abortion. It's one of the basic tenets of the religion.
Nancy's pro-abortion.
Yeah, previously Pope Francis was against the Latin Mass, and he was a vindictive character by all accounts. The last good Pope was Pope John Paul II.
How was he a vindictive character?
There's footage of him. He slapped a woman who tried to touch him. read various Catholic press. He was infamous for having a terrible temper, which I quite admire, but it's not good in a pope. He wasn't a nice bloke. In Argentina, I think he had a reputation for not standing by people under the military regime who'd been, you know, God knows what happened to them. And he was a bit of a... just various ways in which you could say he was a bit dodgy.
Well, as Carlotta has said in the comments, he was a woke communist. He was that kind of psychology. There's already studies indicating, yeah, we like to think that the people that I'm sure that there are some people that go into the priesthood because they're just really, really nice, kind, lovely people, and they really, really, really believe it really strongly, and they just want to serve and whatever. I'm sure there's surely a percentage of priests that are like that, you know, and then there's a percentage that are just nonces. Fine, we accept that. But there is a percentage that are just narcissists. It is elevated among people that go into the priesthood. And it makes sense, because if you really believe that a mega being is calling you, not other people, you, to work for him, then you can see how that is correlated with narcissism. And also, not so much anymore, but if you go back a generation, or if you go to South America or somewhere that's religious, then yeah, you're really looked up to. You're really looked up to if you're a priest. People think you're great. So you can see how it attracts that kind of person. And I think that and also leftism is associated with that kind of psychology. And he was involved in liberation theology, wasn't he?
Pope, I did not like Pope Francis any at all. I remember when I was around 19. I was just about to enter university, and I wrote this letter to the editor criticizing Pope Francis for his views on inequality. I didn't like him one bit.
No. Well, what was wrong with Paul? You said that the last good pope was Pope John Paul. So what was wrong with Benedict?
Apart from the obvious.
Well, what? I don't know. I didn't really follow it. It was German, yeah. He was, and he was an ex-Nazi.
Well, do I need to carry on?
Well, I don't know. He was Ratzinger was on the right of the church, wasn't he? Ratzinger was
Joseph. Okay.
Maybe there's a sweet spot, Ed, that's not so far right.
Oh, so he was too conservative, was he? But
conservative, so much as, you know, goose-steppy, like.
No, but everybody of that generation was
goose-steppy. What's your point?
Was in the Hitler that was German, was in the Hitler Youth, weren't they? Even Kurt, what's his name, the guy that was the first chancellor after the Nazis were removed.
Now you're giving red meat to the people in the comments. This is the stuff they really want to hear.
Okay, yes. Fine. Was it Konrad Adenauer or Kurt Adenauer or something? And even he had sort of negotiated. He was a left-wing politician in the 30s, and even he'd kind of negotiated with the Nazis, and they were even going to meet. I think I read that they were going to, but they asked him to be chancellor. This was before Hitler, but he wouldn't do so because he had to work with this particular other guy, and he said, "I don't like him. He's too Prussian. I'm not going to work with him."
Paul, somebody said the middle guy is in the encyclopedia for the Dunning-Kruger effect. However, there's a study showing that the Dunning-Kruger effect was not replicated. People who think that they are smart are usually smart.
I think the people that say that other people reflect Dunning-Kruger effect and normally have an IQ of about 105. That's
was Lipton in Musical Youth? No.
If you're so confident in your intelligence that you're prepared to accuse others of having the being reflective of the Dunning-Kruger effect, I'm thinking, ironically, that's probably the Dunning-Kruger effect in action.
IQ is around 92.
Ed, could you say that again a bit more slowly so we can understand what your point is?
God, Paul, you're so Dunning-Kruger effect. Unbelievable that you would say that. That's such a Dunning-Kruger effect thing to say. Dunning-Kruger effect, which doesn't replicate, is this idea that people that are not that intelligent think they're more intelligent than they are. And it doesn't seem to replicate. It seems that actually people have an understanding of how intelligent they are. You might get some people that are kind of in denial about this, but there are. Anyway, we're about halfway through. So
Let me give an easy test to the audience. This is a pattern. 14, 25, 47, 91. List the next number, the last number. What should come after 91?
Well, I'll have to write it down. Hang on.
Yeah, it's quite easy. It's really easy. I know Paul has 14,
25. What's next?
Yes, so 14, 25, 47, 91. What comes after 91?
It's 11, easy. Then 12, then 13, then 14, like that, right?
Yeah. So it's 14, 25.
Yeah.
It's a simple pattern. Look at the number.
12, 20, then what's also 47?
Yeah, 14, 25, 47, 91. What do you notice about the second number? So 14, then 25. Just it's an easy number.
Oh, right, easy. I can't. You're doubling it plus something or some bollocks. I can't be doing this now.
It's really easy.
Is it?
What's the answer, Paul?
I'm waiting for someone in the comments to tell me. It could be a long wait.
Come on, let's have it in the comments. So 14, 25.
Yeah, 14, 25, 47, 91.
And then 91.
Yes.
All right, so that's 2, 2, 2, 2, 4. Oh, I see. Yeah, so you take the first number, double the first number, add 2 to the next number. Are they saying 135, 179?
No, not 179. He's smart. Eric got it.
Okay, so what's the pattern, Lipson?
Yeah, so 14 and 14 is 28. 28 subtract 24. 28 subtract the number 3 is 25. That's the pattern. So 47 and 47, 94. 3 from 94, 91. 91 and 91, 182, 179 when you subtract the 3 from it.
Okay, well, well done. Well done, app F1, whatever.
Yeah.
Hang on a minute. Someone's messaging me. Good. Anyway, so we're about halfway through. Have I given him the wrong thing? To those of you new, hello. Welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We're online public house. We meet on Mondays, 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. We'll discuss based science and interesting stuff in the news and stuff that has expanded from our woke joke universities. If you're new, will you do me a favor? Will you please subscribe? Will you subscribe on Twitter? That's at Jolly Heretic. Will you subscribe on YouTube? Leave a like and hit the bell button, all that malarkey, and leave a comment. And we'll subscribe to my Substack, that's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most based science that I can't put on YouTube, in-person interviews, vlogs, blogs, and where, if you like what I do, you can support with the cost of a pint of beer a month. Next to me, we have some garbled new LGBTQ thing, which is actually Dr. Paul Taylor. And he has a very interesting YouTube channel, which is called Readers of the Lost Art, where he takes a wry and grumpy look at life and literature and that kind of thing. So will you please subscribe there? Link is in description. Below, we have Mr. Lipton Matthews, and he has very interesting people on because of a certain degree of privilege that he has. So will you please subscribe on his channel? Again, link is in description. And finally, just joining us, we have Mr. Darren F. McGee. He is a therapist and YouTuber and author. And so would you please subscribe to his channel? Again, link in description. Okay, good. So we have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic Public House, Mr. Quinn. And he has written the following poem, For Your Delectation and Delight. But then when I heard about Zach Polanski, I radically changed the title of what we were doing. It's a bit out of date, but we did talk about Poland earlier, so here we go. We learn that these wonderful Poles are far from a nation of proles. Their earnings are high, and so we ask why. Two words, immigration controls. Excellent. It's a very good point. So if you like Mr. Quinn's poetry, which you should, then please subscribe to his YouTube channel, which is Jolly Heretic Poet or something. Resident Poet, that's what it's called. And also he has a book of Jolly Heretic poetry, which is available on the old Amazon. Okay, just joining us is Darren. Hello, Darren, how are you?
Darren.
Fashionably late.
Very, very, very fashionably, very late. How was your day? Did you have good fun?
I was going like a bat out of hell to get here. But
you missed Darren. Unfortunately, you missed our discussion about the Pope, which for a Northern Irish person would be completely uncontroversial.
Oh, well, uncontroversial. Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, sorry, Ed, can I give you actually my actual title?
Yes.
Did you see the Canadian MP who actually used this? Would it be, we call, you wouldn't call it an acronym, would you?
I suppose it is an acronym. Well, no, I suppose not. No. Well, yeah, but, I did. I was amazed. Yeah.
Yeah. Missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, two-spirit, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning. I think that's Ed. Intersex and asexual plus.
No, I'm plus.
Two-spirit is big.
What?
Two-spirit, it's a fake concept.
I don't think many... left enough. Why are you identifying that as the only fake one?
steady on, Lipson. There's a chap that's been corresponding with me that recently questioned whether asexuality was a sexuality, and he's being possibly thrown out of his university. So,
God.
You know, so...
No, asexuality, as I said before, many of these orientations they overlap, so maybe asexuality could be on some spectrum. I don't know, further research is needed, but he could be right depending on his level of analysis.
Yes, but that doesn't matter when you're up against the Stasi, when you're up against the secret police. It's just that you've upset people, you've hurt their feelings, and therefore that's bad.
Well, Paul, I'm going to send you my book so you can review it somewhere. You're really brave. It's going to be a bestseller.
Lipson, have you sexed your book up yet? Like I told you,
not to. Yet. No, I haven't sexed it up yet. No.
You just want a book with mucky pictures in it, Ed.
No, I've just I did sex it up a bit. I put some more anecdotes in it, some really bad ones.
Darren, he's written a book about black people essentially. And their sort of psychology and stuff like that, and their history and economics. And I thought he's written it in a really academic style. It's the most academic book in the... He's dedicated it to Richard Lynn.
Yes.
And Richard Lynn, God bless him, he did have a tendency to write extremely dry academic books. And it was weird because when he published his memoirs when he was 90, this guy, and it was a really riveting read. You're like, wow, you know, wow. And then, if you read his books, it's very, very dry. So this analysis has 6 points of interest. 1, 2, 3. And this is to honour his memory. This is what Lipson has done. So,
okay.
I stopped doing that when I was about 17. And my history teacher, Mr. Doran, informed me that the way I was writing read like a scientific treatise rather than a history essay, and I must stop it at once. But there you go. He also banned me from using the phrase illustrated by, because I used it a lot.
Okay. I was going to say what's wrong with it, but okay.
I know, whatever, because apparently I just used it all the time.
I thought that was quite germane advice, and...
Thank you. It was quite germane to the issue at hand. Look, I can't help it. There's certain phrases, underpinned by is another one. There's various others. There's various words. I can't help it. I go through the manuscripts of my books looking for these words and try and remove them once I realise that I've used them a lot. Anyway, Darren, so we're going to move on to the next issue. So did you read about the Finnish study on the treatment of people with gender dysphoria?
No.
Oh, okay. That's a shame. I assumed you would have done. But
I didn't even know there was one until you mentioned
it. Oh, yeah. There's a new one that's come out.
I haven't had a chance to read it.
Ed, can we take it in terms to ask Darren about something he hasn't read?
Okay, your turn.
Darren, have you read Lipton's book yet?
Not yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm going to send it to Paul. Do I have Paul's email?
I don't know. You do. I email you both, don't I? You both with the link.
So I send it to Paul.
I have your email, Lipton. I'll have to email you, and then you'll have my address, and you can get a look at it too.
Anyway, chaps, what it found was that people that go in Finland between 1996 and 2019, and it looked at all of these, all of the people, it was the 2,083 people that had been to the clinic, the one clinic in Finland for gender dysphoria. And it compared each of them to 4 controls of the same sex, natal sex, and from the same area. And it found that the previous interaction before presenting with gender dysphoria for male to female transsexuals, or people like with dysphoria, was something like 8%. And then afterwards, if they had transitioned, it went up to something like 60%. And then those that turned up but hadn't transitioned, it previous interaction with the psychiatrist was like 50%, and then after 2 years with the psychiatrist, 60%. And then with the females, previous interaction, the females to males, female interaction, 20%, and then afterwards, whatever, 50%. But the point was that it was the interaction with the psychiatrist increased post-treatment. It increased after 2 years, whether the treatment was that they actually transitioned or reassigned, or whether they weren't reassigned but they had treatment of some kind. They had more psychiatric problems after their treatment than before. So the argument that they often use is that, oh, if you don't give these people what they want, then they'll become psychologically disordered, and they might do themselves in or whatever. He's gone. That didn't go well at all. I don't know. I just assumed that Darren would have checked the old Twitter and would have known what occurred in the preceding week. So I made a mistake there. He was so offended that of my presumptuousness that he's buggered off. He sent me a message though, possibly. Hang on, what does it say? You've all disappeared, he says. Well, hang on,
that's narcissism. We've all disappeared.
No, but we haven't. We haven't all disappeared. No. I'll explain to him. No, you have. No. You have. You've got to tell them. We're still broadcasting, as far as I know. We are still broadcasting, aren't we, chaps? Tommy 5023, are we still broadcasting? I hope we are. Like, what is it that we talked of this issue and it was so egregious that we're not broadcasting anymore? No.
I think Eric's winding you up.
I don't know. We are still broadcasting, according to Tommy 5023. So,
yeah, but do you trust Eric or do you trust Tommy? That's the question.
Well, I know Tommy personally. I was with him on Saturday.
So you trust Eric then?
So I trust Eric, exactly. Yeah. Tommy, you wouldn't trust the guy. He's Scottish. Fine, we'll move on to something else. Lipton, is there something you want to talk about, or can I talk about whatever I want?
You can talk about whatever you want.
Okay, so then the next issue is Primrose Hill, a chap who was as left-wing as they come, who even had his hair in braids, to really integrate into the modern UK with a Y, and he was stabbed by a Nigerian. So it seems to me that even full integration is, where's he got, is not enough, and you're you're done in. So it's almost like I hate to say it. I mean, I feel very sorry for this Finbar Sullivan, his name is, and his family, but there was a massive bloody fight going on, and the one thing I would have thought that you probably shouldn't do if there's a massive bloody fight going on, regardless of the race of the people involved, is get your phone out and film it, because that might piss them off. But that's what he did, and he's been stabbed to death. And it just gets me back to this feeling of like, even before we had cameras on our phones or whatever, if you like, say it was the 80s and there was a massive bloody fight in Liverpool and you were seen running away to a phone box looking like you were ringing the police, right? There was a phone box near the fight and you went to that phone box and it was like obvious you were ringing the police. That's going to cause problems, isn't it? People are not going to be happy about you ringing the police.
Well, do you remember that bizarre thing? It was some rehabilitation program and there was some very well-meaning liberal kid and he ended up getting stabbed by a narwhal tusk. Do you remember that one?
No, I don't. Tell me about it.
They were working with recidivists and he was like I think he might have been an Oxbridge graduate, a bleeding heart liberal who wanted to do the best by everybody.
Oh, this is in central London?
Yeah. Well, this was a while ago. But what I remember distinctly was we get stabbed, and I think one of the stabbings was a narwhal tusk on the wall. And I think someone used it to fight off the recidivists who attacked everyone. But this poor kid died. And then his father went on national media and said his death proved that what he was doing was right. And I'm thinking, I don't mean to be pedantic, but his death proved that how gullible and misled his notions of altruism were.
These people were, one of them was a convicted terrorist, if I remember correctly.
Ed, but it's not often, the comments show their true colours, but that very funny comment, he said, all in all, you're just another brick on Narwhal.
That's very good.
Very quick as well.
Where did Darren go?
We don't really know. There must have been. I think there might be a problem with the internet up his way. So,
well, there this person. I interviewed him. He's a professor. His name is Mark Defant. He writes eloquently on the trans issue. I like his treasure trove of information. Really good. Many studies.
Sorry.
Oh, I didn't get to contribute to the trans discussion earlier.
Well, that just sort of fell apart. I thought Darren would be the ideal person to discuss
but then he disappeared.
But he's disappeared, unfortunately. Maybe he'll come back. He's saying, I'll log back in and see if he does anything.
Let me put up my article on transgenderism on Substack. No, I have an article on transgenderism.
Concentrate on the live stream, right? You shouldn't be, live stream promotes your channel. You shouldn't be doing work. Like, you're sitting there typing an article. Well, because
I'm not typing an article.
but no, I think Paul, this is a good point. But it's a complete lack of any sensible fear of consequences. A total naivety.
But what I'm saying is slightly different as well. The point I'm making is that when his father spoke out in the media, we live in such a climate that I understand there were sensitivities involved. He's a grieving father. But at some point, you'd expect maybe a hard-nosed journalist to say, don't you think his death proved he was a bit naive, rather than everybody indulged the father. So you never get any sensible lessons learned from the incident, because everyone, it's like the Manchester Arena bombing, everyone starts singing Don't Look Back in Anger and all that nonsense. Well, whatever gets truly learnt then?
Exactly. It was never reported that he was filming a fight. It said he's a talented young man. His grandfather was in the filmmaking business and he was killed.
No, it was reported.
Not in the publication.
Well, I don't know what newspaper. I've read some local newspaper or something. It was reported. It was said that he was there doing. He was a person that was doing a degree in filmmaking or something like this. And he was there doing what he loved doing, which was filming. And I immediately thought, okay, so what you were doing was presumably not with a mobile phone either, but probably with quite a nice camera, so you can see it really conspicuously. Is you were filming these people breaking the law, and you were filming these people fighting, it seems to me that's what happened. Clearly that's what happened, and they would see him filming, and it would be obvious he was filming, because I bet he wasn't filming with a phone. I bet he was filming with a nice camera, and they're like, "Hey, what are you doing, bro? What the hell are you doing filming us? We're fighting," and then these people are impulsive and angry, and testosterone's raised, and all this, and then they react. So he did something really, really rather unwise, which I would have thought you shouldn't do.
But Ed, throwing stones in glass houses, I remember you putting your life and my life at risk by taking on an 85-year-old protester outside the Catholic Cathedral in Liverpool.
She was 73, and I felt, I felt we could take her on. And B, I don't know if you remember this, chaps. I think if you go to jollyheretic.com, then you will find it. It's there. We've put it up there. It's there somewhere. I had an interview with Paul in a hotel, and then afterwards you have the fight. So I went and intermingled with outside Liverpool Catholic Cathedral, with these Palestine people, and then she somehow took umbrage and came along with her friend, who was tall and thin, and started complaining and having a go at me. And then Paul stood up for me. And then before long, it was like, calm down, calm down, calm down. It was a full-on Scouse fight. And I was like, my God, how have we got from someone complaining, admittedly slightly rudely, and Paul was like red in the face, and he told me that the one thing his wife had said is like, don't get into a fight if you go to this conference in Liverpool, this narcissism conference, just don't get into a fight. And then he managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, because right at the last minute, just before he went to the railway station, after me and Paul looked round the cathedral, then this happened, and he managed to get into a fight. And I thought, I can see why Liverpool is I don't know what's happened with Darren. It's a bit strange. I can see why Liverpool is like it is. But yes, that's. I don't think we put. I think we were okay. I think we.
But I don't. Oh, I don't. Ed, technical question. I don't know whether the cathedral had any choice or whether they controlled the area where those protesters met. But I was absolutely irate that they were allowed to congregate outside to start the march. It would be interesting to know if the cathedral gave them permission.
I don't think it was their land. I think it was just public land, and they just decided to start. I think they decided to start the cathedral. I think she was saying, wasn't she, the woman that got angry? She was saying, oh, because it's Catholic Church and they're not doing anything about it, and blah, 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 blah. But she got very angry with me. And she said all these nasty things to me. I said, yeah, but fine. But, you know, I'll live longer than you or something. And then this really upset her. Did you hear what he said to me? I'm 73. And he said, if you're watching, madam, if you haven't sorted your psychological problems out at 73, if you're still dealing with your psychological problems by projecting them onto large world political projects, 73, then you're never gonna sort things out. Everyone, Darren's back. Hello, Darren.
Hey,
Darren's back, everybody. Hello. Somebody was just demanding. He's frozen. Yeah, it's not. It's something to do with the internet in Northern Ireland tonight. Is not good. It's just an image of Darren, a frozen image of Darren.
He's immersed in the Guinness factory. That's what he is. Look at him.
He's thinking about Guinness and
the black stuff
and the Golden Wonder crisps, which they still have in Northern Ireland. Have you been to Northern Ireland, Paul?
Yeah, I've been to Belfast. I did some interviewing in Belfast. And I narrowly missed meeting Gerry Adams.
Oh, yes, you told me that. Yeah.
Paul, are you on Twitter?
No.
Good.
Work of Beelzebub Lipton.
Let me tell you why it's so bad. Almost every day on Twitter, and I don't know if you have been noticing it, but almost every day, there is some random large account saying, look, in 1000 AD, India's share of GDP was 32%. By 1947, it was 4%. Have you ever seen that data?
No.
It's on Twitter almost every day. Yes, I have a piece coming out about it. It's so annoying. India now is richer than India in 1000 AD. No, but like, it's really annoying. Like, so annoying.
Why is it annoying, Lipton?
No, the share of a country's GDP does not indicate wealth. So, for example, India's share of GDP now is over 8%, but the per capita income is over $2,600. In 1000 AD, the per capita income was 450. If other countries become more productive, your share of global GDP will decline.
That's true. I mean, like, Britain's share of GDP was massive until it was overtaken by America.
Yeah.
So
and look at small countries like Denmark and Luxembourg. Their share of GDP is not astronomical, but they're rich countries, especially Luxembourg and Liechtenstein.
Yeah. In general, small countries in Europe are. I mean, Andorra is a wealthy country.
Yes.
Small countries can act as tax havens and
The way they measure GDP, if like traffic jams contribute to GDP because lots of petrol is being used up, but it benefits nobody.
GDP is really just a production metric. It's not telling you about the quality of the economy.
Yeah, exactly.
Nigeria GDP is really big in terms of a number, but is Nigeria a rich country? No.
So what's a good way that you should measure how well your country is doing?
Well, per capita income.
There's quality income, of life indices.
Life expectancy, governance indicators, really important. Sweden and Singapore, those countries are always topping governance indicators.
Going back to what we were talking about earlier, that's the problem with the UK, that the on various indicators. The important one, I think, is just housing. If you can't afford a reasonable house to live in, that's bad. That's very, very bad. And that's not a problem in Finland, because there's only 5.5 million people in a country that's bigger than the UK. So you would have thought the logical thing to do, if you were the UK, would be to get the population down.
Exactly.
The policy should be 50 million by, 2030 or something like that. Like, the policy should be to heavily reduce the population, but yet they bring in immigrants.
Population growth can promote innovation, but for population growth to be fruitful, the economy must be growing at a high level. And the growth that's being delivered by the UK cannot sustain a growing population.
No, and there's not enough room to, because then if you do grow the population, then you're building over the green belt, you're building, which they shouldn't even have to be, you're building over parks, you're reducing standards of living for people all the time. And then also, what immigrants are you bringing in? Are you bringing in immigrants that are going to innovate and do things for the economy, like the Huguenots?
Those immigrants don't have to migrate to the UK anymore because their countries are rich. So if you live in Sweden, why would you migrate to America? Sweden is not a rich country. So the people who are going to migrate will come from the third world.
Right, but then if you're going to come from the third world, then we want the best people from the third world.
That's a problem. The best people from the third world are still below the developed world, because the quality of education is lower in the third world and getting worse. So in Zimbabwe, it was Zambia. So when you look at PISA's data, elites in developing countries, they test below ordinary people in developed countries. So when you get the best of the best from the third world, they're still not comparable to the best of the best in the first world, or even above. People are slightly above average.
I do find it hard to believe though that an engineer in Zimbabwe really genuinely has an IQ of 100.
That's really hard to believe. But
if they did, then all the buildings in Zimbabwe would be falling down, and they're not.
They're not. No, where IQ. Look, I don't find it that hard to believe, because the quality of education in the developing world is less. So the average engineer in, let's say, the UK has an IQ of 107. In the developing world,
average engineer, it's about 140, isn't it?
And then remember, the quality of the work that's done in developing countries is different. So the standards are higher in the West.
No, that's fair enough. Right, should we move on then to the next issue I was going to talk about? So, Primrose Hill. I had this song in my head, but it's actually about Richmond Hill. Sweet lass of Richmond Hill, sweet lass of Richmond Hill. Anyway, there's Primrose Hill, and then the next thing is Epsom. So, basically, Epsom salts. Yeah, Epsom has... People think of Epsom... There's been an incident in Epsom outside a Methodist church where a girl was gang... this word that apparently we now can't use on YouTube, by a group of people from, you can imagine where. And again, it makes me think, well, apropos our Primrose Hill fellow, he's filming people, don't do that. When will the idea catch on that the streets are now not safe if you are a woman? And to be honest, even when I was a kid, the general idea was you'd say to a girl, admittedly probably if you were trying to pull her, but you'd say, let me walk you home. And the idea was that if you say to a girl, let me walk you home, A, yes, you're probably trying to, get in the house and then get in her pants. But B, what you are saying is that she is rape worthy. Right. Whereas
of the word, you're not allowed to say that you just said
that. Sorry, she is grape worthy. And so if you don't walk a girl home, what you're saying is she's not grape worthy. That's what you're saying, which is an insult. But that was always what was done. Surely that was what was done. Oh, I'll get home on my own, I'll be okay. No. I feel happy if you let me walk you home, and you're expressing the fact that she is worthy of, you know. Whereas if she's an old lady, then you can let her walk home. But apparently, young girls in Epsom don't realise this. I had a friend when I was a sixth former called Charlotte Poulton, Punk Charlie. And she died, she was found dead in 2010 in the early hours of the morning in Epsom. People think of Epsom as lovely Surrey kind of place. It's not. Something happened to her. We don't know what. No one was ever convicted. It was probably an accident. It could have been an accident. It could have been an assault. We don't know. It's not a safe place. And this is what's happened in front of an Epsom Methodist church. So it makes me think, these people come into the country, what do? They loot and grape. And this is what they're doing. Lipson. Am I right?
All right. So quick point. What exactly are we talking about now?
Crime in the UK? Immigration leads to.
Okay, good. The immigration argument, Ed, is not only about culture, it's also about civilization. Assimilation means that you want the immigrant to become immersed into the new civilization. And when you are importing people from third world countries who are still below the formal stage of intellectual development, you're going to have a problem. This week, I was reading some of the old papers of George Oosterdijkhoff, and I think that his arguments are indeed germane. You cannot flood the country with people who are not adults yet. So there are civilizational theories. In some developing countries, they're adults who are still at the stage of children or pre-modern peoples then. And if you import those people into the UK or any other country and refuse to refine them, you're going to have problems.
Two things. I mean, like, would a girl in Kingston, Jamaica, walk home on her own at night?
She would. We know that Jamaica is not the safest place in the world. We have reduced crime quite a bit, but women usually are fearful when they walk home alone at night. But she would.
Oh, really? Because I would, even in the 90s. In my experience, for example, we went on this trip, this school trip, to see Oliver at the Palladium, and we came back. We're about 17, and these girls all got people to pick them up, even though they didn't. They just lived down the road. They weren't going to walk home at night, and that was in quite a rich area of London in the 90s. And I would have thought it's got worse since then. So I don't understand what this girl was doing. I'm not victim blaming. Okay, I do believe that people should be able to do these things. They should be.
Yes, they should be.
But they're not, and I don't think they were even 30 years ago. So I can't understand why they were doing these things. It doesn't make any sense to me. What do you think, Paul? What's going on?
Oh, I just don't know when people are going to. It's going to reach a point at which there'll be a natural reaction from the majority of society. There just seems to be weird gaslighting. In the media, you see this technique all the time where leftist commentators say you can't tar whole communities with the same brush and pretend that, I've said this before, but they pretend they don't understand the concept of mathematical proportionality. And then I saw a GB News debate where the guy was saying, you can't blame these individuals. And the other guy was saying, I'm not. I'm talking about culture that the people come from, and culture influences people. You're allowed to criticize culture. Well, apparently you're not. And it just goes round in circles. But one interesting aspect is I saw an interview. It was like an hour long, long form interview with an Irish academic who was giving all the reasons why social unrest wouldn't start in Ireland, which is quite ironic given the events of recent days. So these things are incredibly difficult to predict, but in Ireland there seems to be some pushback. People finally seem to, for various reasons, fuel prices being the latest, but there does seem to be in Irish cities more pushback than in England at the moment.
And again, I just love lauding Paul. Again, Paul is right. British people, oh, British, what the hell are you doing that? What the hell is that?
I don't know. Sorry, as a foreigner,
Paul and Ed, I am shocked at the naivety of locals in the US and England. They're so oblivious to what has been happening over the years. It's just mind blowing. There are still people in the UK who are unaware that DEI is a policy. They're just completely unaware, and I'm wondering, when are they going to wake up?
Well, I suppose it's a very horrible thing to realize that you live in a country where your government hates you and has your worst interests at heart.
Exactly.
And so you, that's not the case in the third world.
No, I mean, we don't like immigrants.
They might not care about, yeah, they might not care about the people, but they don't actively despise them.
And we're not pro-immigration. We're not pro-immigrants.
You have corruption, and you just have people that get into power, and they, you know.
When refugees come to Jamaica, we send them back to Haiti.
Quite right.
Ed, I am interested. You know the process whereby, so on the Daily Heretic, there was one of the abuse victims of the Rotherham gangs, I think it was, and she spoke about Jess Phillips, and how Jess Phillips is one of these bleeding hearts who never misses a chance to say, "I've devoted my life to helping girls and women against violence." and this victim pointed out, "You might have done before you entered Parliament, but ever since she's entered Parliament, all she's done is do things like block national inquiries and betray the victims." And it begs the question, what, you know, how insidious, once you become a politician, you just leave your conscience at the door.
I think so, yeah. I think that I've read quite a few biographies of politicians, and some of them are quite open about this, that William Waldegrave is an example. It's a very good book. That you're part of a club. You're an absolutely elite club, and you've worked so hard to get into that position, and you've applied to be MP God knows how many times, you've been through, you know, this whole thing, and it's this super elite club where nobody else understands what you're going through other than other MPs. And so of course you end up with things like John Major and Edwina Curry having an affair. Nobody else gets you other than somebody else that's in this super elite club. And so you can see how it completely corrupts you and makes you not care about ordinary people. And also once you're in it, then they're super ambitious. That's why they're MPs in the first place, most of them. And so once they're there, well, that's just the start, isn't it? Then there's the super ambition to become a private secretary and a minister of, an undersecretary, a minister of state, a cabinet minister. And you can see how it's totally corrupting. And so therefore you leave all your principles behind.
Something worse if you're like some Tory landowning toff, you act in your own class interests. I can almost understand that.
Yeah, but there's not many of them anymore.
Yeah. But I'm saying, you're using that as one end of the spectrum. But the idea, the Jess Phillips of this world, you build your whole career on presenting yourself as more working class than anyone and only having victims' interests at heart. It means the betrayal is so much worse.
Yes. I mean, you can even see that kind of thing outside of politics. Even within the being a YouTuber or whatever sphere, I can think of examples of particular podcasts that have started off as, oh, I'm all heretical and I want to, not me, obviously I'm too pure, but I'm all heretical and I'm based and whatever, and then they get money, and then the people that give them money start saying, well, can you do this, can you do this, can you do this, and before long they've completely betrayed whatever it was that motivated them in the first place.
Yes, I want to be in that position.
Yes, it would be great, wouldn't it, like trigonometry.
Yes. Yeah, Lipton actually is very honest about his desire to be able to betray all his principles.
Yes, I really want to be in that position where I'm offered lots of money to betray my principles. That would be a really good story.
But it gets complicated, Lipton, because you want to get in a position where you can betray the principles you never had, because your only principle was your willingness to betray the principles you didn't have. It just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, it would be really good.
It would be great. No, but that's I think that's what happens to them. And then they're under a lot of pressure as well. It's a high stakes job. You've got to be re-elected every 5 years or 4 years. So you can see, and the level of, when I was talking to interviewed Neil Hamilton years ago, and he was saying that he was an MP for a long time, and he was saying you can see how they get drawn into alcoholism and whatever, you know, there's all this pressure, and then it's the booze that lubricates the meetings and meeting the right people and so on. And so he was saying that he was an MP from 83 to 97, and he was saying, you know, it changes you.
I think that you should go on Twitter, you Ed Newton should go on Twitter and say you are no longer a right winger. You have extricated yourself from that lifestyle completely.
Well, I haven't. I mean,
you should. So you can get a lot of money.
Call me a right winger. They can call me a right. I suppose in some ways I am a right winger, but I'm not.
You can just sell your principles to get money. That's the point.
Right. So I need to say that there's no group differences.
No, exactly.
Right, because that's the thing that causes trouble. That's the thing, like I had an article in the Daily Mail and they pulled it, where I looked at dysgenics and they commissioned it, and then at the last minute they pulled it.
When was this pulled? Recently?
Yeah, quite recently, the other week. And it went quite high up, and they were going to publish this thing on this. It's very important, you know, the Rayner effect. So I published it in Conservative Woman. Basically people still don't, they can't talk about, wasn't Neil Hamilton banged up? Nope, he wasn't. So I don't know who you're thinking of. Neil, who do you think, who could they be thinking of? Neil Hamilton wasn't banged up, he was sued, he wasn't banged up. It's there. It's you get corrupted, and that's what I think happens to Jess Phillips. It may be that Jess Phillips was this raging feminist that wanted to help people, but then she also wanted, she was offered, she's a junior minister, isn't she? Mm. And so you know, that's enough that the people think, well, shut up, Jess, shut up. You'll be junior minister. Stop talking.
Yeah, except, Ed, you know, sins of commission, sins of omission. It's the way in which she trades upon her supposed working class purity. Rather than just look the other way and passively be corrupt, she does it in a way that actually maximizes the betrayal. It's horrible.
Well, I agree with you. That's why there's these memes of her holding her hand over the mouth of working class young girls. That she still goes on about the supposed principles that she has, the fighter for women and women's rights and all this. While
I want to be in her position, in a position like that someday, where I would be able to write a book saying whites held me down and make a lot of money.
Yeah, but Lipton, I could see you as a minister deporting more Jamaicans than anyone in British history.
I would deport them. They should go home.
Even I think I could see you there deporting even those that are descended from those that came in 1948. Just saying,
yeah, I would. Yeah, they go out and go home.
It's just not good enough. It's not on, and you have to leave. But then you'd be damaging Jamaica though. If those people return to Jamaica, surely it's good for Jamaica that a lot of these people have come to England, isn't it?
I would send them somewhere to Africa. I would send them somewhere in Africa, yes.
Benin. That's exactly where
Benin in Nigeria. Benin in Nigeria, not the Roman Empire, Benin.
Yeah, that's where they should go. That's where they need to go. They're bad for Jamaica, they're bad for England, they're bad for everybody. I think we can agree on that. I don't know. God, people are messaging me. I don't know what to do. Okay, well, we're going to round up then. So remember, Paul has a new... Paul has a new video where he blames me and people like me, we who categorise things in Aristotelian fashion.
No, it'll come out tomorrow, but what it's actually about, Ed, is the way in which your mate James Lindsay, and because you're friendly with him, aren't you?
Well, I interviewed him.
Right, and who's the other guy? There's a guy, Stephen Hicks, who's a weird academic who doesn't know anything about Nietzsche but always talks about him. But basically, critical theory gets blamed for and cultural Marxism for invading all our institutions. So I just look at some actual texts from the founding texts of critical theory, and they're completely anti-identity politics, which I thought was, you know, quite ironic.
Well, Paul, you should know this because you're a philosopher, but cultural Marxism is not really a concept. Marxists don't care about identity politics. They're interested in the international political economy and class and state.
The Frankfurt School, though, classed as neo-Marxists, wrote a lot about culture.
Yeah, that's different. That's a fringe school.
Well, no, but Lippen, my point is the James Lindsays of this world have a whole conspiracy theory whereby their theories have infiltrated all the institutions.
Exactly my point. It's just like postmodernism. Postmodernism is the denial of grand meta-narrative, not necessarily true, but a meta-narrative. So, for example, economic growth is good or the environment is good. Those are meta-narratives.
What's that going to do with the Frankfurt School? They weren't.
No, we're talking about postmodernism because James Lindsay likes to talk about postmodernism too.
I don't talk about postmodernism because they also talk about critical theory, and I'm just
And the German elite studying in Germany, and they're like, James Lindsay is very hard to listen to. I used to read Arrear magazine though, but he likes conspiracies.
Well, didn't he also think the Archangel? Michael the Archangel was taking over the world via the Illuminati, and he went a bit bonkers.
Well, we will have a midlife crisis occasionally. Okay, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in, and we will see you all next Monday. And remember, Lipton Matthews and Paul's channel, Readers of the Lost Art, where you can see what we're talking about here. And tally here, everybody, and all that stuff, and goodbye.
Goodbye.